As always, the Williamson petition was first read by Jim Payne, a U.S. magistrate in the federal court office. Payne was known to have conservative leanings and a similar dislike for habeas work, but he was also highly regarded because of his innate fairness. It had been his duty for many years to plow through each habeas corpus filing and search for valid claims, which, though rare, did exist often enough to keep the reading interesting. To Jim Payne, the job was crucial. If he missed something buried in the voluminous briefs and transcripts, then an innocent man might be executed. Janet Chesley's petition was so well written that it captured his attention in the first paragraph, and by the time he finished it, he had some doubts about the fairness of Ron's trial. Her arguments centered on the issues of inadequate defense counsel, mental competency, and the unreliability of hair evidence. Jim Payne read the petition at home at night, and when he returned to the office the following morning, he met with Judge C. and recommended a stay. Judge C. had great respect for his magistrate, and after a long discussion about the Williamson petition, he agreed to stop the execution. After watching the clock and praying fervently for 23 days, Ron was informed that his execution had been delayed indefinitely. His brush with death had taken him to within 5 days of getting the needle. Jim Payne passed the habeas petition on to his law clerk, Gail Seward, who read it and agreed that an in-depth review was called for. He then gave it to the office rookie, a law clerk by the name of Vicki Hildebrand, who, because of her complete lack of seniority, had been assigned the unofficial title of death penalty clerk. Vicki had been a social worker before law school, and she had quickly and quietly assumed the role as the token bleeding heart in Judge C.'s moderate to conservative office. Williamson was her first habeas case involving the death penalty, and as she read his petition, she was captivated by the opening paragraph. "This case is a bizarre one about a dream that turned into a nightmare for Ronald Keith Williamson. His arrest came nearly 5 years after the crime, after Mr. Williamson's alibi witness was dead, and was based almost entirely on the confession, related as a dream, of a seriously mentally ill man, Ron Williamson." Vicki read on, and was soon struck by the paucity of credible evidence offered at his trial and by the haphazard strategies of his defense. When she finished it, she had strong doubts about Ron's guilt. And she immediately asked herself if she had the nerves for such a job. Would every habeas petition be so persuasive? Was she going to believe every death row inmate? She confided in Jim Payne, who devised a plan. They would draft Gail Seward, more of a centrist, and get her opinion. Vicki spent an entire Friday copying the lengthy trial transcript, 3 copies, one for each member of the conspiracy. Each spent the entire weekend reading every word of Ron's trial, and when they huddled early on Monday morning, the verdict was unanimous. From the right, left, and center, all agreed that justice had not been served. Not only were they certain the trial had been unconstitutional, they also believed Ron might very well be innocent. They were intrigued by the reference to the dreams of Ada. Janet Chesley's petition made much of the dream confession Ron had allegedly made. He had been reading the book shortly after his arrest, and had it in his cell when he gave his own jailhouse dream to John Christian. Published 7 years earlier, the book was out of print, but Vicki found copies in used bookstores and libraries. The three read it quickly, and their suspicions of the authorities and Ada were greatly magnified. Since Judge C. was known to be rather abrupt when dealing with habeas matters, it was decided that Jim Payne would approach him and break the ice on the Williamson case. Judge C. listened carefully, then got an earful from Vicki and Gail. The three felt strongly that a new trial was in order, and after hearing them out, the judge agreed to study the petition. He knew Bill Peterson and Barney Ward and most of the gang down in Ada. He considered Barney an old pal, but had never cared for Peterson. Frankly, he was not surprised at the sloppy trial and flimsy evidence. Strange things happened in Ada, and Judge C. had heard for years that the cops had a bad reputation. He was particularly bothered by the lack of control Judge Ronald Jones had exerted over the proceedings. Bad police work and slanted prosecutions were not unusual, but the trial judge was supposed to guarantee fairness. Nor was he surprised that the Court of Criminal Appeals had seen nothing wrong with the trial. When he became convinced that justice had not been served, he and his staff launched into a thorough review of the case.